Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. I just woke up. Well, I just fell asleep, I should say. I was like, just stay awake long enough to do the podcast, and then I accidentally fell asleep. So I just woke up from an unplanned, accidental nap. Whoa, my head's spinning. Be awake, brain. I'll try hitting myself in the face. That worked a little bit. Alright, today we're talking about Book 9, Chapter 8. What is Grushenka's stance on all of this? What did her witness statement mean? And what did the dream sequence mean? Dream sequences are stupid, aren't they? That's something that I always try to avoid in my own writing, because dream sequence is just a bunch of stuff that didn't happen. Although, the book I'm writing at the moment, I think, has two dream sequences in it, and I packed them all full of symbology and stuff, so, hey, who knows. Anyway, when I was reading this particular dream sequence in yesterday's chapter, I was just kind of like, here we go, this is a bunch of stuff that didn't happen. This chapter's long enough as it is. I am Norwegian said, I'm glad it went well. Oh, thanks. This is referring to a conversation we've had over 3 days back and forth via the podcast. But thank you, I am Norwegian. Yes, it was fun. The author you mentioned, is that the kid you had talked about when we first started the book? Aaron Huggins. Yeah, that is the kid that was my student and eventually published Live a Little, his first novel, at the age of 15, which is available through upandupmedia.com.au. Live a Little. Okay. I am Norwegian said, I had the same image of Dmitri as Grushenka blurted out. Of him being... Wait, sorry. I had the same image of Dmitri as Grushenka blurted out. As him being someone who says weird shit sometimes, but who never lies about matters of conscience. I'm not so sure that I believe that anymore, though. Yeah, I think he's... I started to think more and more in yesterday's chapter that he's just making stuff up. I think he's guilty. He's just lying through his teeth. What is Grushenka's stance on all this? She was just being honest. So her statement doesn't mean much, except that it builds on the previous statements saying the same thing. She did immediately believe Dmitri when he said that he had not murdered his father. She also mentioned Katerina as the source of the 3,000 rubles he had last month, though I'm not sure if the officials already knew that. I'm so confused. Didn't she have a little fling with Dmitri's dad? Right? And the dad was convinced that they were in love, and he'd got a bunch of money and was expecting her to come at any minute to his house. And now she's just like... Suddenly she's in love with Dmitri, and also she doesn't seem to care that his father is dead. She doesn't really seem to care at all. Which, I don't know, doesn't make sense to me. Like, imagine you're in some kind of a love triangle, and you're in love with two different people, and then one of them is dead, and the other one supposedly murdered them, and you're just like, oh, I suppose I love this other one then, now. What did the dream sequence mean? Interpreting dreams is difficult. It's not something I'm good at. I did finish Modern Man in Search of a Soul recently, though, and it does discuss dream interpretation. What does the symbols of Mitch's dream mean, or rather, what are they? They're expressions of something not yet consciously recognized or conceptually formulated. Another helpful thing to ask yourself if you're trying to figure out what the meaning of a dream is what conscious attitude does it compensate? I think the dream is compensating for Mitch's naivety. He consciously thinks that he will tell the truth and that things will work out, but he is subconsciously starting to realize that this is not the case. In the dream, he is being pulled towards ruin. The peasant woman could represent the state he is leaving the woman in his life, how he has failed every woman he has loved. Who has ever loved him, sorry. The dream also reveals a burning desire to fix things, where only last night he wanted to kill himself. Though the only thing I really feel confident in interpreting from the dream is the first thing, that his subconscious is compensating for his naivety. Very cool. There we go. That's a pretty good analysis of the dream, I reckon. Here you are saying you're not very good at interpreting dreams. Laura Y. Stitch said, no one seems to know what Grushenka wants at any time. Now she says Dmitri is an acquaintance. And before she said she was willing to go to Siberia with him. Yeah, I think she's a big fat liar as well. I think she's a bit of a crazy person. Maybe. It might be a little bit reductive of me to say that. But I don't know. Like, I don't really trust her at all. I don't trust Dmitri either. I think these two kind of deserve each other. Well, very short conversation today. Only two comments on yesterday's chapter. So with that, we'll move forward. We'll read. Wait a minute. Did another one just come through just as I said that? Just to confirm that right now. What's happening here? Come on, Reddit. No. Oh, that was Laura Y. Stitch's one just came through. Anyway, yes. Two comments. Thanks, guys, for those two comments. Short conversation. It's going to be a short episode because it's also a short chapter. It's only a three-page chapter, so let's get on with it, hey? Chapter 9, They Carry Mitya Away. When the protocol had been signed, Nikolai turned solemnly to the prisoner and read him the committal, setting forth that in such a year, on such a day, in such a place, the investigating lawyer of such and such a district court, having examined so and so, to wit Mitya, accused of this and that, all the examined so and so, all the charges were carefully written out, and having considered that the accused, not pleading guilty to the charges made against him, had brought forward nothing in his defence, while the witnesses so-and-so and so-and-so and the circumstances such and such and such and such testify against him, acting in accordance with such and such articles of the statute book and so on, has ruled that in order of preclude so-and-so, Mitya, from all means of evading pursuit and judgment, he be detained in such and such prison, which he hereby notifies to the accused and communicates a copy of this same committal to the deputy prosecutor, and so on and so on. That's really written like that. Like, the author couldn't even be bothered to fill in, details of which court and which lawyer and which prison. In brief, Mitchell was informed that he was, from that moment, a prisoner, and that he would be driven at once to the town and there shut up in a very unpleasant place. Mitchell listened attentively and only shrugged his shoulders. Well, gentlemen, I don't blame you. I'm ready. I understand that there's nothing else for you to do. Nikolai informed him gently that he would be escorted at once by the rural police officer, Mavrikovich, who happened to be on the spot. Stay, Mitya interrupted. Suddenly and impelled by uncontrollable feeling, he pronounced, addressing all in the room. Gentlemen, we're all cruel, we're all monsters, we all make men weep and mothers and babes at the breast, but of all, let it be settled here and now, of all, I am the lowest reptile. I've sworn to amend, and every day I've done the same filthy things. I understand now that such men as I need a blow of destiny to catch them, as with a noose, and bind them by a force from without. Never, never should I have risen of myself, but the thunderbolt has fallen. I accept the torture of accusation, and my public shame. I want to suffer, and by suffering I shall be purified. Perhaps I shall be purified, gentlemen, but listen for the last time. I am not guilty of my father's blood. I accept my punishment, not because I killed him, but because I meant to kill him, and perhaps I really might have killed him. Still, I mean to fight it out with you. I warn you of that. I'll fight it out with you to the end, and then God will decide. Goodbye, gentlemen. Don't be vexed with me for having shouted at you during the examination. Oh, I was still such a fool then. In another minute I shall be a prisoner, but now, for the last time as a free man, Dmitri offers you his hand. Saying goodbye to you, I say it to all men. His voice quivered, and he stretched out his hand. But Nikolai, who happened to stand nearest to him with a sudden, almost nervous movement, hid his hands behind his back. Mitya instantly noticed this and started. He let his outstretched hand fall at once. The preliminary inquiry is not yet over, Nikolai faltered, somewhat embarrassed. We will continue it in the town, and I, for my part, of course, am ready to wish you all success in your defence. As a matter of fact, Dmitri, I have always been disposed to regard you as, so to speak, more unfortunate than guilty. All of us here, if I may make bold to speak for all, we all are ready to recognise that you are at bottom a young man of honour, but alas, one who has been carried away by certain passions to a somewhat excessive degree. Nikolai's little figure was positively majestic by the time he had finished speaking. It struck Mitya that in another minute this boy would take his arm, lead him to another corner, and renew their conversation about girls. But many quite irrelevant and inappropriate thoughts sometimes occur even to a prisoner when he is being led out to execution. Gentlemen, you are good, you are humane. May I see her to say goodbye for a last time? Asked Mitya. Certainly, but considering, in fact, now it's impossible except in the presence of... Oh, well, if it must be so, it must. Grishenka was brought in, but the farewell was brief and of a few words, and did not at all satisfy Nikolai. Grishenka made a deep bow to Mitya. I have told you I am yours, and I will be yours. I will follow you forever, wherever they may send you. Farewell. You are guiltless, though you've been your own undoing. Her lips quivered. Tears flowed from her eyes. Forgive me, Grusha, for my love, for ruining you too with my love. Mitya would have said something more, but he broke off and went out. He was at once surrounded by men who kept a constant watch on him. At the bottom of the steps, to which he had driven up with such a dash to the day before, with Andrei's three horses, two carts stood in readiness. Mavriky Mavrikyevich, a sturdy, thick-set man with a wrinkled face, was annoyed about something, some sudden irregularity. He was shouting angrily. He asked Mitya to get into the cart with somewhat excessive surliness. When I stood him drinks at a tavern, the man had quite a different face, thought Mitya as he got in. At the gates there was a crowd of people, peasants, women and drivers. Trifon Borisovich came down the steps too, all stared at Mitya. Forgive me at parting, good people, Mitya shouted suddenly from the cart. Forgive us too, he heard two or three voices. Goodbye to you too, Trifon Borisovich. But Trifon Borisovich did not even turn around. He was perhaps too busy. He, too, was shouting and fussing about something. It appeared that everything was not yet ready in the second cart in which two constables were to accompany Mavriky Mavrikyevich. The peasant who had ordered to drive the second cart was pulling on his smock, stoutly maintaining that it was not his turn to go, but Akim's. But Akim was not to be seen. They ran to look for him. The peasant persisted and besought them to wait. You see what our peasants are, Mavriky Mavrikyevich. They've no shame, exclaimed Trifon Borisovich. Akim gave you 25 kopecks the day before yesterday. You've drunk it all, and now you cry out. I'm simply surprised at your good nature with our low peasants, Mavriky Mavrikyevich. That's all I can say. But what do you want a second cart for, Mitya put in? Let's start with the one, Mavriky Mavrikyevich. I won't be unruly. I won't run away from you, old fellow. What do you want an escort for? I'll trouble you, sir, to learn how to speak to me if you've ever been taught. I'm not old fellow to you, and you can keep your advice for another time, Mavriky Mavrikyevich snapped out savagely, as though glad to vent his wrath. Mitya was reduced to silence. He flushed all over. A moment later he felt suddenly very cold. The rain had ceased, but the dull sky was still overcast with clouds, and a keen wind was blowing straight in his face. I've taken a chill, thought Mitya, twitching his shoulders. At last Mavriky Mavrikyevich, too, got into the cart, sat down heavily, and, as though without noticing it, squeezed Mitya into the corner. It is true that he was out of humour and greatly disliked the task that had been laid upon him. Goodbye, Trifon Borisovich, Mitya shouted again, and felt himself that he had not called out this time from good nature, but involuntarily from resentment. But Trifon Borisovich stood proudly with both hands behind his back and staring straight at Mitya with a stern and angry face, he made no reply. Goodbye, Dmitri Fyodorovich, goodbye, he heard all at once the voice of Kalganov, who had suddenly darted out. Running up to the cart, he held out his hand to Mitya. He had no cap on. Mitya had time to seize and press his hand. Goodbye, dear fellow, I shan't forget your generosity, he cried warmly. But the cart moved and their hands parted. The bell began ringing and Mitya was driven off. Kalganov ran back, sat in a corner, bent his head, hid his face in his hands, and burst out crying. For a long time he sat like that, crying as though he were a little boy instead of a young man of 20. Oh, he believed almost without doubt in Mitch's guilt. What are these people? What can men be after this? He exclaimed incoherently, in bitter despondency, almost despair. At that moment he had no desire to live. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? Exclaimed the boy in his grief. That is the end of the chapter. It's also the end of book 9, the end of part 3. So tomorrow we start part 4, book 10, chapter 1. Very exciting stuff. Have your say over at Reddit. reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. Thank you very much for listening today, and I will see you tomorrow.